Everybody grab a seat for LA Live.
LA Live.
Western Ave and Harvard Street for LA Live.
LA Live.
When your way to the world's exhausting, take a ticket to Lower Austin. LA, LA, LA Live.
Well, 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 what's up, Austin? We are so thrilled that you've joined us on this rainy night. Hashtag climate change is definitely real. Since we are indoors and we can only squeeze so many people into this sold-out room, when you cheer, we need you to make the noise of 200 happy people pretending they're enjoying some gorgeous summer sunshine with a delicious Aeronaut beer in their hand. When I make these Rocky arms, can we get a big, ugh? Can we try right now? Welcome to the very first Maiden Voyage episode of our brand spanking new, fresh off the parking lot, still has that new podcast smell. Okay, that's enough. Live variety show presenting truly awesome talent from Lower Austin, Greater Boston, and beyond, and impromptu soap bubbles. Co-presented every second Thursday night from June through September 2019, and maybe beyond, by Aeronaut and the PRX Podcast Garage at Zone 3's spectacular outdoor amphitheater in Lower Austin. That is a lot of words, my friend. We call it LA Live!
LA, LA, LA Live!
My name is Jason McCool, and I'm the head of arts and culture at Aeronaut Brewing Company in Somerville, Massachusetts. Please help me give a warm welcome to a man who combines the velvet vocal stylings of Edith Piaf, the sassy stage presence of Brian Boitano, and the lushly hirsute mane of Kenny Loggins. Give it up for the composer of our insanely catchy theme song, LA Live's official house musician, and most important, my very good friend, the one and only Mr. Phil Bierman!
Jason, it's Berman. You've known me for 4 years.
Right. Yeah. My bad.
Yeah, okay.
Sorry, Phil. Folks, after months of planning, we are beyond thrilled to finally peel off the wrapper on this baby and give it a spin. That's an entire sentence made of mixed metaphors. Anyway, we are so happy you're here for the ride, and you look great. You even smell great. Phil, wouldn't you agree that this room has that fresh, new, live podcast smell?
Yeah, I guess you could say that.
And wouldn't you agree our crowd tonight looks exceedingly handsome and hip?
Oh, yeah, the handsomest, the hippest.
Exactly. Hey, Phil, I think the show is going pretty well so far. What do you think?
I mean, we literally just started, so it's a pretty small sample, but it's going fine.
Me too. Hey, you know what? I could go for a beer. Are you able to get me one?
What? Why?
Because your name is Phil Bierman. Phil Bierman?
Okay, it's Berman. And also, if this is the quality of the jokes that we're going to have all summer, this is going to be a long summer. Also, look, we talked about this, and my contract clearly states that you can't expect me to engage in the witty banter and play the guitar at the same time, so it's just going to have to be one or the other, and I'm barely making anything for this gig, so, you know.
Phil, are you suggesting that if we wanted a superhuman capable of multitasking with excellence, panache, and finesse while dealing with bucket loads of BS, we should have hired a woman?
I mean, correct, but you're definitely pandering to this audience, and that's really low-hanging fruit.
I got plenty more. Hey, Phil, did you hear the one about the guy who took a date to a podcast garage?
Okay, McCool. Okay, all right. I think we need an intervention here. TBH, LA Live is feeling awfully scripted so far, so scripted, in fact, that I appear to be reading these words literally off of a script. It's like I want to express myself using my own words, and yet I cannot, because I am bound by the words that appear magically in front of me, composed by you some 40,000 feet in the air 2 weeks ago after consuming a questionably priced yet surprisingly satisfying pizza snack. Like, how would I have known that? What sort of wizard are you who possesses this power to put words into the mouths of men? Next month, I get to write the opening.
You got it, Phil.
All right, great.
Oh, hey, any update on that beer?
Jesus Christ.
My friends, we have a fantastic debut show lined up for you tonight. Aisha Burns is here. Heidi Shin is here. Lamont Price is here. Pilar Quintana is here. Rachel Sumner is here. But kicking things off tonight, an audio producer living in Cambridge, Massachusetts, he produces the Masterpiece Studio Podcast, is also the studio producer of Ministry of Ideas, and is a founding member of the Hub and Spoke Podcast Collective. And he has performed stories live at the Moth, which he just won. Give it up for Nick Anderson.
So because the age limit on this event was 21 plus, I'm assuming that most of us here have been drunk before. And you know what that feels like, and somehow it can come upon you after an evening or maybe an afternoon, I don't know when you drink, and it's pretty debilitating. And so you wouldn't bring that behavior to, say, a job interview. Unless the job interview was at a bar, but... Again, I don't know anything about your drinking habits or your professional life. And let's say that feeling could just come upon you at any time, often without reason. And that's a fun adventure we call low blood sugar. I'm a type 1 diabetic. I actually had an endocrinology appointment today. I am apparently pre-diabetic, which is not true, but it means I have good control of my blood sugar. I had an interview a couple of years ago for a job at a local public media station whose name I won't name, where I currently work, so you can find out. And I was all dressed up because it was a job interview, and even if it's for radio, you still want to look the part. I may have had a vest on. And midway through the interview, I could just tell, you know, I mentioned the sort of feeling of being out of place and the sort of feeling of being similar to being drunk, and it comes out of nowhere and you're like, you say things you don't mean and your body moves in unusual ways. That did happen, but I knew it was coming. For me personally, low blood sugar happens, it starts with a sort of shoulder thrust. Like I start thinking I'm going to fly. It is a version of flying. I don't quite leave the ground, but I do sort of leave the mental space that we're all occupying together here on Earth. And I was moving through this job interview for a show that I do not work for now and will not name. And I just felt it. I felt the shoulders. And I think my interviewees, or rather interviewers, thought I was pumping myself up. Like, I'm here for this job, and like, I am going to get it. And they started asking me not difficult questions, but I was just thrusting, you know? I was just thrusting forward and not really... I was bullshitting, frankly, but I was, you know, a lot of a job interview is bullshitting, right? And I was kind of dancing around any of the subjects they talked to me about. And about halfway through the thrusting point, I realized I was on a downward trend and I didn't have any glucose tablets. I didn't have any snacks. They offered me coffee, but no snacks. So I wasn't going to get out of it. And rather than say something like, I'm a type 1 diabetic, and I think I'm having a blood sugar reaction. I just kept thrusting, and it was probably one of the worst interviews I've ever done. I did not get that job, which you may be surprised to hear, but I did leave the place, which might be close by, and wandered down Western Avenue looking for food. I was committed. I had to get a snack. I was slowly descending into the period of low blood sugar that is most similar to being drunk, where nothing can go wrong and everyone is in your way. But I needed to get a snack. Unfortunately, it was after 5 p.m., so the Swiss Baker's was closed, which did not prevent me at that point from parking in the Swiss Baker's parking lot and just spinning. Low blood sugar has a lot of different manifestations, but there's also a point of it where your body thinks, okay, this is bad. Let's get some glucose from the reserve and let's just start moving. And so that's part of the thrusting. At that point in my life, it was pirouetting, just down Western Avenue, again, in a vest. So I'm just spinning. Sometimes in the street, sometimes on the sidewalk. This is before a lot of this construction happened. And I spun all the way over the river, down Western Ave in Cambridge, and all the way into Central Square, at which point I fell over in the street and hit my head. Because it's Cambridge, immediately five people showed up who were med students and asked me what was wrong. And I said, you know, I'm a type 1 diabetic and I'm really embarrassed and I'm two blocks from home and I just want some juice. Someone found some juice. I don't know where they went, but they gave me some juice and a bunch of people asked me if I had an endocrinologist and sort of like if I was aware of my condition. I was like, look, I've been a diabetic for about 15 years. Like I know what's happening. And I got home, but for years, I blamed Western Avenue. I avoided running down Western Avenue. There were a lot of great restaurants on Western Avenue. I didn't eat at them. And I avoided spending a lot of time in the neighborhood. I mean, obviously, I spent a lot of time here at the podcast garage, but that was more out of a matter of professional responsibility rather out of a desire to be here. And as I was thinking about telling this story, I realized it wasn't the neighborhood's fault. It was mine. And long story short, I work at said place that I was trying to get a job at, albeit for an entirely different show. But just as you wouldn't show up drunk for a interview, you also wouldn't show up with low blood sugar. And if you can prevent one or the other, I would say do neither. Thank you.
Nick Anderson! Okay, next up, my friends, she is a co-founder of the band Twisted Pine, but she's now out on her own, and she recently released her debut solo EP, which is called Anything Worth Doing. Please give it up for one of Boston's very best emerging singer-songwriters, the wonderful Rachel Sumner!
Wildflowers bloom before you, breaching the fist of winter's rule. I know they'll die, so do you, 'cause winter's long and winter's cruel. All of this living just to lay our head down. All that is given, taken. The ground,
Rachel Sumner.
We'll have her back a little bit later on in the show.
My friends, our next guest is a Boston-based comedian who has appeared in many major festivals and has been featured in Hulu's Triumph the Insult Comic Dogs Election Special, one of my favorites, NPR's Bullseye with Jesse Thorne, Funny or Die's Oddball Comedy Tour, and he has recently been named as one of Comedy Central's comics to watch. Say hello to tonight's featured stand-up comic curated by our friends at Comedy Party, the very funny Lamont Price.
Thank you very much. Yeah, that was a hell of an introduction, right? Maybe I gotta live up to that shit. Made me sound cool. This guy's been on TV. You seen him on this? That is wild, but it doesn't change the fact that I took an Uber pool to get here. I'll tell you something right now. That Uber pool decision sends your confidence plummeting back to earth. You hear me? You can be in the streets killing it. Killing it. But if you gotta take a car with roommates to go to Popeyes, that's a tough decision. Choose wisely. And I live in Brighton, right? And I take Uber pools out of Brighton, and you know, I look like me, you know what I'm saying? So my Uber driver be named like Chad. You know what I'm saying? And you gotta read the description, like, oh, Chad's known for his great conversation. And immediately I'm like, oh shit. I might have to stab Chad. Like, this wasn't the plan when I woke up this morning. I'm trying to go A to B. Like, I don't care about Chad's puppies. I love dogs, but I reserve the right to not give a fuck about yours. You know what I'm saying? Chad's nice, though. Chad's like, hey, so we have to go pick up your co-passenger. And I'm like, all right. And again, I live in Brighton, so my co-passenger be somebody named, like, you know, Megan. Right? And you know Megan, she goes to BU, and she sucks, you know what I'm saying? Like, I mean, she sucks. And I mean the worst Megan, like the M-E-A-G-H-A-N Megan, that Megan. Oh, the worst, like the bottom shelf Megan's, like, ugh. You know Megan, she goes to BU, right? But she thinks Alston is sketchy. Oh my God, Alston is so sketchy. Alston and Brighton are so sketchy. It's like, bitch, you from Sesame Street? You're not built to handle anything. So, you know, Megan's coming and I gotta prepare myself mentally for her insecurity and weird upbringing. Right? When she gets in the car, I gotta make sure my knees are pointing straight ahead, right? And then when she sits next to me, I have to say the right words to Megan to reassure her that I'm not gonna kill her. You know what I mean? I gotta be like, hey, Megan. Welcome to the situation. Right? And then she looks at me and she just goes, if I didn't mention for the final fortune, that's over there. I should have fallen the final fortune. That's how white girls talk. That's all I hear. That's all I hear when they talk. I'm like, I know, Megan, he won't shut up about these puppies. She's like, but the first is only just for them, it's my Me and Megan still kick it. Her weed guy is consistent. I mean, that Uber rant. The weirdest shit that ever happened to me in an Uber pool, I thought would be like the coolest thing. This is the craziest. I was sitting in this Uber and I got recognized, right? I thought that would be dope, but you ever, like, so, you know, you're sitting in the Uber, right? I'm focused on my mission. Like, I'm going to Popeyes and I'm getting the chicken, right? Like, I'm mixing it up. And this guy sits next to me. And you can feel somebody staring at you, right? And he said something vague and like kind of creepy. He said, "Yo, I know you." Right? Which that can mean a lot of shit. And I said, "Huh?" He goes, "You're that comedian dude. I seen you before, yo. You're hilarious." And I was like, "Oh," I did the hand on the chest. "Oh." Right? Sincere, thank you. He goes, "Don't even worry about it, man. I heard you on this podcast, man. I seen you on Hulu. Yo, keep it up, all right? I'm trying to be like you one day." I was like, "We're in the same Uber pool." "Congratulations, nigga, you made it." I forgot where I'm at in time. I don't know. I know there's some Uber shit. Here's a tip for the Uber poolers out there. This happened. I smoke a lot of weed, right? And you know, it's legal now. It's been legal in my house for 20 years, but I'm glad y'all caught up. And don't get high and sit in the back seat of an Uber pool. I don't know if your imagination is anything like mine, but that shit can turn into a kidnapping situation immediately, like in your mind. Cause I giggle when I'm high, like I giggle. So the Uber came and I kind of hopped downstairs, like I was happy. And then I didn't even think about getting in the back seat. I just bypassed it. My mind, my ego is like, "I'm gonna sit up front with the driver and we're gonna be best friends." And I opened the door and I hit him with the pose, like, "What's up?" I hit him with the full arm, "What's up, Greg?" Whatever his name was. And Greg was just like, you know, long shit, "Hey, just getting the fucking." And I sit in and it's like, "Hey man," and we start driving and I'm baked, right? And I'm just like loose. And then there were two girls in the back seat, right? But I, as far as I was concerned, they did not exist. All I heard coming from the back seat was just, I'm in the front like, "What's wrong with this dude's tires?" "Hey, yo, Greg, your tires sound real needy, man. I think one of them just broke up with his boyfriend. Said something about getting his CDs back." I don't know why, that's stupid. Right? And as he's driving, I'm looking out the window and I'm so high, I'm confused. I'm like, "Oh, wait a minute, because we must be dropping off the tires." Because I'm like, "Where are we? I don't know where, I don't recognize these trees. These are not the trees in their Popeyes. I'm not used to this." I asked the driver, like, "Yo, where are we going?" And you ever be nervous, right? And then the person with you is so calm that it freaks you out. And I'm like, "Yo, where are we going?" And he just went, "Don't worry." "You'll get to your destination." It's like, who says destination? I'm freaking out. Do I drew a drop and roll out of this truck? You know? I'm starting to think of all kinds of shit that can happen to me. My brain is going as I'm, you know, I start thinking about like sex trafficking. Hey, don't hate. I got a specific look. One false move, I end up in Venezuela somewhere. I need to be careful. Where am I at on time? I have 4 minutes? Wow, I didn't, okay. Sometimes I get on stage and I'll talk. Why does Jason look like he's about to interview me on 60 Minutes? And up next, Lamont Price will spill his guts. He's ready, sitting there judging me in the judge's chair. All right, I'll just do this and then I'll skip. I'm gonna go buy some seltzer at Stop and Shop. I got a nice little Thursday plan. Stop and Shop, seltzer, watch the game, and then smoke weed and go to sleep. I'm gonna eat something in there somewhere. In the thing. How do I get, okay, I'll do this to get out of here. This is stupid. This is a dumb story. Anybody heard the story about the dude that got beat up by an ostrich? I don't know if I should tell it, but it was on Yahoo, so you know it's true. It was a story. These dudes were hanging out, I'm assuming, wherever ostriches hang. I don't know where they kick it, but these dudes were hanging out where these ostriches are, and they were taunting an ostrich, right? And after a while, the ostrich must have been like, I've seen me on Google. I'm an ostrich. And the ostrich just beat the shit out of one of these dudes in front of his entire crew, and which is hilarious. But what happened was that guy was really embarrassed by the ass whooping he got. And he was so embarrassed that, like, later on that night, he came back and he shot and he killed the ostrich. Fucking crazy, right? My first thought was like, how did he know which ostrich? Like, is he really which one we looking for, man? You want the Adidas on? Like, how did he know? Right? That's a memory. And then I was like, what? Okay, I read further, and it said the reason he was really embarrassed was that while he was getting his ass beat by this ostrich, his girlfriend was there too. And she was laughing the whole time. She was doing the head bag with the belly, with the touching. And I was thinking, my first thought was like, if I get beat up by a hilarious looking creature, right? And my girlfriend doesn't laugh, I'm dumping her immediately. That's the kind of shit that brought us together, right? And I'm trying to dig into his insecurities. Like, what do you think? What was gonna? Okay, so he got beat up by an ostrich, right? And his girlfriend laughed. Big deal. Like, you get over that in a couple weeks. What did he think was gonna happen? What do you think she was gonna start dating this ostrich behind his back? A girl's that shallow? Like, you know, he calls her up one night. You know, he goes, "Hey, girl, we still going to Fuddruckers tonight? Wherever they eat." And then you know how sometimes girls lie, they go, "I'm not really feeling good tonight. I'm just gonna stay in and do my hair." And then in the background, he just heard, "What? Is that an ostrich, bitch?" Or maybe they go out to eat. Maybe they go to Fuddruckers. Maybe they're eating, and you know, dude's jealous and he's accusing, "You just gonna text that ostrich right in front of me, right in front of everybody here at Fuddruckers? Right in front of the Titan toothpicks, you're just going to do me like that? What are you talking about? Why are you so jealous? I'm just texting Stephanie." Stephanie. Stephanie just texted you GWAAAAAAAAAAAAAAAAAAAAAAAAAAAAAAAAAAAAAAAAAAAAAAAK. That's ostrich speak. Hey, my Instagram is LPizzle12. Check it out. Thank you.
My praise. Next up, she is a contributor to PRI's The World and the BBC World Service, a former producer for National Geographic, co-creator and producer of a podcast about immigrant musicians called The New American Songbook, produced in partnership with the Ground Truth Project and WGBH. A frequent instructor at the Podcast Garage, she recently led their first six-week class on podcasting at the East Boston Public Library. My friends, give it up for Heidi Shin!
So when I was growing up, there were two things I absolutely hated. One, Korean school, and two, piano lessons. So when my four-year-old daughter asked me for two things, one, she wants to learn Korean, and two, she wants to play the piano, I panicked. But let me back up and explain just how we got here to this moment. So in our neighborhood, when your kid turns four, there is something called the lottery. It's like this arms race to figure out where your kid is going to go to kindergarten in the public schools. So it begins with a set of school tours. So picture this. There's a chipper guide who walks backwards while talking to you in front of a set of really anxious parents through the school hallways. There's one mom who clutches a giant binder with printed spreadsheets. I'm serious. And another keeps asking, so does the compost in the cafeteria really get composted, or did you just make that up? I, on the other hand, am too sheepish to admit I don't even know what questions I'm supposed to be asking. What I do know, though, is this. There are a lot of families vying for a spot at the bilingual Spanish school. There was some research study that says if your kid grows up bilingual, their IQs will be higher. They'll be better at solving problems, and it will even ward off Alzheimer's, they say. But you know what? I didn't buy it. I am bilingual. I speak Korean and I speak English, but I'm the first to forget your name at a party. And there are a bunch of problems in life I can't seem to solve. Plus, there are hundreds of kids applying to this school for 3 open spots. For families like us, who don't speak Spanish, that is. So we said we would not do it. We would not apply. But then there was a presidential election. Threats to resurrect a wall. There were migrant children separated at the border. And suddenly, we changed our minds. Against all odds, we put the bilingual school down as our first choice. And we waited. So the way it works is your kid's name gets put into this big computer. I like to think about it as like the mega jackpot lottery, you know, the kind where there are crazy ping pong balls like bouncing all around a tub and a woman on primetime TV picks one out and announces the winning numbers. That's what it feels like on lottery day. You wait for this letter or a phone call where the school system contacts you to tell you where your kid has landed. And on that fateful spring morning, against all odds and crazy statistics, hundreds of kids applying, and only 3 seats, we were offered a spot. On playgrounds and supermarkets across town, that's what the parents of 4-year-olds were talking about that day. Where's your kid going to kindergarten? And when we'd share our news, they'd exclaim, it's a unicorn, a lark. Your family, you guys won the lottery. We were on cloud 9. Fast forward to the first day of school. My daughter hasn't slept in weeks. She's waking up in the middle of the night sobbing in gibberish. I'd hold her and say, take a deep breath. I can't understand you. See, she'd say, this is what it feels like when I go to school, where they speak in Spanish and I don't. And in that moment, I remembered too. I came to the U.S. as a small child from South Korea. And on my first day of school, the teacher spoke English, but I did not. My parents were the weird ones who showed up in suits when everyone else wore shorts, just to prove that somewhere once, they were the educated ones. And I remembered when there was no one to help me with my homework. I remembered my own mother, the faint pencil line she'd drawn my assignments, marking the words that she couldn't understand in English. She thumbed through her Korean-English dictionary, which was weathered and worn, and then scribble in the margins the words that she wanted to learn too. So eventually, I stopped asking her for help. I was just a child, but my mother, she started asking for my help instead, to fill out doctor's forms when she didn't know the word for pain, and to translate for her at the store when she couldn't find what she needed to cook what we ate back home. So early on, I had resolved that I was going to be the American mom I always wanted. The one who knew the drill, the one who baked the cookies, and the one who sat at the table when you did your homework, instead of working and worrying all the time about how to fit in. But it was the first week of school for my daughter now, and I found myself waiting outside her classroom where all the other parents had gathered. I saw them halt their rapid Spanish patter as I approached, and they'd lean in to greet me, kiss me on one cheek, and I'd awkwardly wonder, should I turn my other cheek too? I pulled my daughter's backpack. From my daughter's backpack, a folder full of assignments that I could not understand. And for months I'd wondered, had we made the wrong decision? Had we really won the lottery? But then came the day when my daughter stopped crying. The day when I heard her singing softly to herself a song that she had learned in Spanish. The day I saw her leap happily into the arms of her teacher at school, and she did not turn back to find me. And the day she came home and asked, "Mama, why don't I speak Korean too?" And that's how we found ourselves at Korean school on Saturday mornings. But she explains to me, "Mama, you were born in Korea, but I was born here." At age 5, she doesn't quite have the words to explain, and she doesn't fully grasp the borders that we have created. What's a city, or a state, or a country? But when we travel, even if it's just to Somerville or to San Francisco, she knows enough to ask, "What language do they speak here?" When she makes drawings, she mixes and mixes the crayons and the paints until she finds just the right color of brown or peachy white. Never yellow or black, because those aren't real skin colors, she says. "Mama," she tells me, "you were not born here, but you are American." "I was born here," she says. "I was born here, and I speak English and Spanish and a little bit of Korean." "But I am not Korean or Spanish," she tells me. She smiles proudly and says in her 5-year-old voice, "I am an American. I am Boston."
Heidi Shin!
I needed to hear that. It sounds like a lot of people in this room did too.
Joining us next from the far distant land of Beverly, Massachusetts. Wow, we got some Beverly in the crowd tonight. She is a gifted violist and singer-songwriter who heads out on tour later this summer with Julian Baker. Let's give a warm LA Live welcome to the absolutely fantastic, stalling for time a little bit, as she plugs in her last chord. We good? The absolutely, utterly fantastic, you're gonna love her, Aisha Burns!
It's an old game, running circles with my old pain. Infinite gain, that it's true. Love's a long shot, chase it round the network. No. know I like it too. Saw you stretch out with sweet arms like the world had just taken you back. And I had tried to fight it. Well, I know I ain't crazy, louder than my mind. From a silence that caught us, I heard you tap out three times. I cannot hurt my rage in the light.
Having fun out there so far? This is so cool that you all are here and we're doing this. Wow. We're very, very happy. Our next guest is a member. They're a member of the Gray Court Poets and the Arts Institute Group of the Merrimack Valley.
have published widely and have appeared as a guest on local TV programs and participated in poetry presentations for LGBTQ groups all around New England. And they will be leading us all in a group recitation. So if you find your programs and flip them around, of a delicious, original poem called Spring. Everyone say hello to Pilar Quintana.
Thank you. Yes, I am here to lead a group reading of this poem. I have read it before, but never as part of a group. My poem, The Spring, is about spring, but it is also about redemption and about second chances. And in these dark times, I think it would be absolutely lovely to hear many voices say the words together. So if you would join me, that would be absolutely great. The Spring. Thaw me. Thaw me like the spring sun. Under a skin of ice, the brook babbles like a living thing. It gurgles, it spits, it stretches its limbs, remembering all of the places it once ventured, remembering the roar of the ocean, claiming it as its own. Under my icy, unmoving veins, the currents run, hot and reckless and amazed that even this is given a second chance. To drop like tears, to drip from the corners of my mouth, to force life into the red meat, afraid to move in the middle of my chest. This torrent of merciless existence beating against my walls like tempest waves, demanding the sea cliffs open and let them in. Let me in. It is not over yet. It has scarcely begun. This endless spring, this relentless thaw. I look around myself for my excuses, my reasons, my fears, the vestiges of my shipwreck. The waves have washed it all away and left behind today. Thank you all very much.
Pilar Quintana! Once again, my friends, Rachel Sumner.
So it goes. I saw you heading for the door in your fancy clothes. I'd never seen sets at 6, streetlights at 7. You're still not home and it's 11. I know you said that she's just an old friend. I never said I loved you first. I never had any claim. At least the days are getting longer. We'll keep the night. Trying to lose my love for you a little more each day. I'm just trying to lose my love for you a little more each day. Say it slowly. Ooh, you can't deny you lie poorly.
Rachel Sumner. Wow, are we not incredibly lucky to have such incredible local artists in our community? Well, 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 my friends, time certainly flies when you're surrounded by this amount of passion and talent, and sadly, that is a wrap on the very first LA Live. Can we get a huge round of applause for our very first lineup of LA Live guests, Nick Anderson, Aisha Burns, Heidi Shin, Lamont Price, Pilar Quintana, Rachel Sumner, and our LA Live house musician, Phil Berman. Thanks also to our friends at PRX, and shout out to technical wizard Kevin O'Connell on sound, stage mama Alex Bird, Palace Shaw, intern Isabel Hipper. She got the pizza, we love her. And to tonight's awesome food sponsors, Flatbread Company. As a reminder, we will be releasing a recording of this show as a podcast soon, so please sign up on our email list for easy access to news about the show. Our next show will take place, hopefully, outside at Aeronaut Alston. We have a beer garden right here, in case you've never been. We're there every Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday night, all throughout till mid-September, with the best in live local music. It's always free, and it's always a lot of fun. And you can drink a lot of delicious Aeronaut beer out there. Always the second Thursday of the month for LA Live, with musical guests, including Visiting Wine and Vinegar Mother, and our resident comedy ensemble. They couldn't make it tonight. They'll be with us the rest of the season. Bodega and a lot more. So that is all from us for tonight, folks. Thanks again for coming out to support live local arts, and have a fantastic and very sunny late June.
Everybody grab a seat for LA Live. LA Live. Western Ave and Harvard Street for LA Live.
LA Live.
When the weight of the world's exhausting,